Welcome to the First Time Facilitator Podcast. Whether you're a first time facilitator or a seasoned pro, listen in for tips and tricks to make a bigger impact at the next workshop you deliver. And now, your host, Leanne Hughes.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Leanne Hughes, and I'm here to help you book out five more workshops for every workshop that you deliver. I hope you're doing awesome, having a great start to the week. Hey, I'm really excited to release today's chat with a friend of mine who I met through my private Show Up community last year. Now, we haven't spoken in 2021 until today, until today's conversation. And honestly, I was just amazed, astounded, and really proud of the progress that he and his company has made. Today's guest is Paul McGregor from Business Lab. You can find them over at businesslab.co.nz. Saying that, he's based in New Zealand and is a collaboration broker. Hey, what a cool phrase is that? Helping to transform how organizations work with their community. Think about community. Every organization has a community, whether that's a council and its residents, a government agency and its citizens, or a business association and its members. By harnessing the power of your community, your organization can achieve more than if you simply go it alone. And don't facilitators resonate with that the most? So Paul is also the host of the Beyond Consultation podcast. And in this chat, he shares how he started up that podcast 12 months ago, releasing episodes every 2 weeks. And what's really exciting is that he shares it on his podcast. Well, through the podcast, he has created hundreds of thousands of dollars in consulting revenue for his company. How awesome is that? Like I said, when I think of Paul, I think of progress. And in today's episode, you'll hear his very candid story about his facilitation journey, both as someone exploring it as a career and how he also navigates the business side of it as well. We also have similar backgrounds in how we discover the work of being a facilitator just by simply being a participant in an environment where we were in a group with strangers and we walked away from a workshop just being best friends with everyone else in the room and just curious about how a facilitator could actually do that. Paul also shares his lessons learned from being a first-time facilitator, some of the failures that he's had in the room, that constant struggle of us, I guess, needing to be the expert and then being okay with giving your group the space they need to share, to listen, and not having those crazy expectations on your shoulder that I am sure we all shoulder in an urge to get a resolution or a solution right there and then. Paul also mentions a concept called psychodrama, which I had never heard about before, but I'm now off and Googling it. I think it sounds like a wonderful tool for making empathy come alive in your workshops. This conversation, I've got to admire Paul. He was so honest, and I'm sure you'll learn a lot about his progress as a facilitator and a business partner as well. Don't forget, when the conversation is over, you can join our community of over 1,500 facilitators in the Flipchart group. We'd love to see you over there. And of course, reach out to Paul, let him know what you thought, what you learned, what resonated with you. You can find all of his details and links to Business Lab in the show notes at firsttimefacilitator.com/episode179. Now, onto the show. I'm excited to welcome onto the First Time Facilitator podcast this week, Paul McGregor, who's joining us from across the ditch in New Zealand. Paul, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, kia ora, Leanne. Fantastic to be with you and nice to be a guest on a podcast. And I'm nervous right now, whereas I host my own podcast and I don't get nervous when I interview other people. So it's interesting being on the other side of things.
Well, let's dive into that and talk a bit about your podcast to start. I know that you started that sort of quite recently. And it's great to see you hosting a show. What led you down the path of hosting that podcast?
Well, you're partly to blame, Leanne. So, yeah, I mean, I'd listened to podcasts for a few years, but it was things like This American Life as a favorite, Song Exploder. I love music, and Song Exploder is a great podcast. They take apart songs and tell the story of how they're made. Awesome. And I hadn't really listened to business type podcasts before. And then yours popped up on my radar because I love facilitating. I'm interested in how to get better at that. And then the added bonus of your podcast was how to improve the business side of being a facilitator as well. And so I'd been writing articles for a little while. That was kind of a year ago, that was one of my main marketing activities, was writing articles for this magazine called the Local Government Magazine here in New Zealand. And you'd write this article and it would just go off into the ether. The editor would say, thanks for your article, and that would be it. And I kind of just had no idea if they were making an impact or if anyone was even reading them. And I was like, I don't really enjoy this and it's not really playing on my skills. So inspired by listening to your podcast, which was kind of the first businessy type podcast I'd listened to, I thought, I'm going to give this thing a go. It seems like it's a bit more of also building a relationship and you get to interview some people who you would otherwise never be able to talk to. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree. Like the whole dream podcast guest list. You said you were nervous being a guest. I'm nervous when I get someone on that dream list on the show. Oh, Paul, I've got to say, I'm totally nervous chatting to you today.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, I was about number five on your list. Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
What have you discovered? I guess the unintentional side effect of starting a podcast is when I was a first-time facilitator back, you know, episode one, gosh, through to episode 50, I felt kind of like quite stale in my approach. And then I've just discovered that through the process of interviewing, I think I've become a better facilitator. Have you discovered that as well?
Yeah, the benefits from it have been things that I wasn't anticipating, as well as some benefits that I was. So, you know, I thought it might be a good marketing method, and it definitely has been. I was reading in a Facebook group the other day, oh, podcasting is dead. Don't bother starting a podcast. The market is too saturated. Well, I started a year ago, I think, and I've only published every 2 weeks. So I've only done 20 episodes. And you know, we're a $400,000 consulting business. So we're not big. There's three of us employed. Yeah. And we can probably credit about $400,000 of work so far, either directly or indirectly. Amazing. To the podcast. And it's changed the type of conversations that we're having with clients now. So that benefit has been huge. But then there's the other benefit that you've just mentioned, which is you learn more about how you speak. So especially I edited the first 5, 6, 7 episodes, and going through and seeing what are your common phrases that keep popping up. You know, is a one that I say a lot. It's like I'm trying to get validation and agreement from the group. You know, like, is that okay? So, you know, you learn what those little ticks are that you have. It's helped me to slow down when I'm speaking as well. So, yeah, sort of some unexpected benefits that I wasn't really thinking about when I started it.
It's funny, when I was editing, you could actually see the wavelengths of when I was saying or now and so, those like my fillers, and you could see what the wavelength would look like. So it became really easy to edit because I'm like, oh, that's the wavelength where I would be saying this. Like you could actually map it out.
If anyone is listening and going, oh, I want to start and I can't afford to pay an editor, there's some software called Descript, which is amazing. So it turns your audio into text. And then you can just edit the text rather than editing audio. So then it's like you're working on a Word document rather than
Leanne. That is next level.
It looks like your mind has just exploded. And it is. It's amazing software. So I would highly recommend that to anyone who gets started. And it means you don't have to train yourself in audio production now to be able to start a podcast.
Thanks for that tip. So tell us about your facilitation story. How did you find the career and do the work that you do now for Business Lab? Like, was it a series of steady steps or like MBS says unsteady?
Very unsteady. I call it the scenic route. So my entry into facilitation happened when I was working for the Ministry of Justice here in New Zealand. So my study was in law, public policy. And you know, in that job, I was writing these long documents, making recommendations, and sitting at a desk for 8 hours a day, kind of clocking in at the start and clocking out at the end. And it was really important subject matter, but I didn't gel with how the organization worked. It was very hierarchical. And I was looking around going, this can't be the next 40 years of my working life. So what else is out there? And on a whim, I signed up to this program with an organization called Life Hack, which was focused on youth mental health and well-being. And it was a 3-month program with three or four day events, one a month. And I went along to the first one, and I remember driving out in the car with someone else who I hadn't met before and asking, you know, what are we getting into? And he said, I don't really know. I kind of know this is about young people in the community, but I don't really know much beyond that. And so, and then I remember we arrived at this place and had this very warm welcome, and we got put into this circle, and they sort of invited you to introduce yourself. And the first person spent about 15 minutes going through his life story. And I just remember sitting in the circle going, what the hell have I got myself into? And it took me a day or two to sort of realize what was going on and how they were facilitating things and what they were doing. And I turned from being quite skeptical at the start to sort of by the end of the program, I was asking them, how did you do that? How did you take this group of 30 people from all around the country who had really different backgrounds and perspectives? And by the end of it, we'd built these really strong relationships. We were starting new ideas together, and I'm still in touch with a lot of those people today. So, and I had never come across good facilitation before that. So that was kind of my entry into it.
Yeah. I remember Catherine Lloyd, who's been on the podcast before, I remember going to an event. It was at the State Library. This is, 15 years ago. And we were, I guess, a group of strangers coming in together to talk about the future of Brisbane and what we wanted. We were like best friends. By the end of the session, like everyone was quite like just sharing all the stuff that you'd never expect to share. She just held the most amazing presence. And you're like, wow, that could actually be something that I could do. Then what did you do? Just like go back and quit your job? Or did you like how did you then transition?
Yeah, almost.
Amazing. But
part of the program was, okay, go back into your workplace and now try and apply what you've learned. So we were learning about well-being science, technology, design thinking, systems thinking. And so I went back into this hierarchical government organization and did not have a very enjoyable time then trying to apply what I'd learned, because I was one person who'd learned something in isolation, and then you go back into the system that doesn't work in that way.
Like another planet.
That wasn't a particularly good time. So I lasted another couple of months, and I just left. Didn't really have anything to go to. My wife and I ended up moving to a different part of the country. We built a tiny house as a break and another project to get ourselves stuck into. And then I kind of from there started to rebuild into a different career. And I just tried out different things for a while, which was really helpful.
Yeah, great. It's good that you just made that, because sometimes we can sort of sit and like wait a bit longer, and then now sometimes when we're in a job that isn't giving us that, our confidence then dwindles, which makes any type of move after that really quite difficult. So it was quite brave. And maybe there's a few facilitators listening to this going, maybe I'll go and build a tiny house. And
I don't know. I'm in retrospect, I'm not sure I'd recommend just quitting your job. You know, in retrospect, I would maybe take down my hours. So I would have gone down to 4 days or 3 days and then spent 1 or 2 days trying to build out other stuff that I was interested in, or going and volunteering for something. So that was one of the most useful things I did when I was going, okay, I want to learn everything about facilitation now, was I found a mentor. I just Googled facilitators in Nelson, which is where I live, and a chap came up. He was sort of at the later stages of his career, and he was really stoked to mentor me and have someone who was interested. Mm-hmm. So in fact, he helped me to facilitate a workshop on tiny houses as a way to practice my facilitation skills.
Amazing.
I didn't know anything about building tiny houses, but it managed to be pretty successful anyway.
Yeah, well, I said the best way to learn something is to teach someone else. So you would have gotten to the detail as you were structuring that. So tell us about the work that you do now. What type of workshops do you deliver?
Yeah, so at Business Lab, we help organizations to collaborate with their community. Usually it might be a local council working with a group of residents. It might be a government agency working with a particular group of citizens, or might be a business association wanting to engage business owners in their area. So you've got an organization and then they don't really have that greater connection with the people that they're trying to serve. So we're kind of the bridge in the middle that helps out with that. And we don't do one-off things. We try to sort of slowly build up a relationship so that when we disappear, things don't just stop. So, you know, that's one of the things that I experienced early on when I was sort of making this shift into being a consultant. I was just so happy to get some work that I didn't spend the time at the start, you know, scoping up, what are you trying to achieve? Why are you doing this? What does success look like? What are the risks? what actually is your budget. I was just so happy the first time I ever got a consulting gig. I was just like, yay, I'm in. Someone wants to work with me. That's nice. So now we put in place these longer programs to really strengthen the relationship between an organization and their community.
By the way, when you just delivered your messaging was very clear there.
Well,
yeah, I know that's taken you some time.
Yeah. And I mean, that's congrats. A good segue for you and people listening, because or sort of how we know each other as well, Leanne, is I was part of one of your programs last year, I think it was, yeah, during the pandemic, because lucky New Zealand, we're out of it now for the most part, which was your Show Up program. And I loved being part of that and the kind of the community you built around that. And one of my missions that I was working on during that was how to communicate what we do. So a lot of the things you were sharing around story brand and you know, how to get that tagline was stuff that popped out of that Show Up program. One of the most helpful things that somebody recommended, I don't know if it was you or someone else in the community, was just list all of the things that you don't enjoy doing and just have this list of things where as you're doing it, you're going, ugh, this, I don't want to have to do this again. So that was the first thing we did. And then we went, okay, well, of those things, what is going to be the lowest value that we can give off to somebody else? And yeah, then we took a bit of a different route to some other people in the group. So a lot of people then went to Upwork or whatever those platforms are called and found a freelancer, which I know you've done for some things. Mm. Whereas we thought, no, we kind of want to build a bit more of a team. So we advertised for a VA, virtual assistant, on a page called a website called Do Good Jobs, which is just New Zealand based.
Yeah.
But has sort of this audience of people who are really motivated by impact and purpose. And then the person we found, it's been a really interesting journey because we brought her on as an assistant, and already within a year, she has grown into being someone who can do client delivery work. She's growing into being more of an operations manager. And so it was a really interesting experience of bringing somebody on for one role that we thought we needed, and then kind of just trusting someone and allowing them to grow the role into what they thought was needed in the business. And it's resulted in much more positive outcomes than if we had hired someone to just do assistant work. And yeah, so that's been a really interesting experience. For me, the big change in the last year or so has been to just try and have a bit more fun with things as well. I think, again, when I was starting out, I felt this pressure to solve everything. There was one project in particular, and it was the first one that I bought into the business with Business Lab. And yeah, this weight of expectations that I put on myself, that was around young people in the top of the South Island where I am. And I felt as though I had to solve every single issue that was going on there. And nobody else put that expectation on me, but I put it on myself. So that's kind of been a big thing I've been working on in the last year and a half, with someone coaching me through what is going on in my own head as a facilitator that makes me think that that's my job when it's not.
Oh, can you unpack
that? Does that make sense?
Yes,
yeah, no, you look slightly confused.
No, I don't look. No, I'm maybe that's more my reflection state. Mm. What I totally get that. I think, but sometimes when I get, or I listen to podcasts, right? I listen to like all these amazing thinkers and I hear what they're doing in their business. And then I automatically put the pressure on myself and think, oh, I must be doing all of those things too. And like, it's then just sort of filtering that out and going, look, what do I actually need to do? And I love that you've brought fun in as some criteria as well. It's like, we get to choose because we decided to do this.
Yeah.
So how have you managed to unpack that? I know you've had coaching. Well, was there any particular activity or?
Well, first I'll go back a little bit as to why I think that pressure went into my brain at all. And maybe partly it's because of that word facilitation. And, you know, I remember reading, it comes from the French facile. It's about making things easy for the group. And so immediately you go, oh, well, it's my job to make sure the group does whatever it exists to do. But I don't know. I think that's a little bit of a myth of facilitation that I want to bust. And I'm seeing a few people starting to bust it a bit more now, that it doesn't necessarily have to be our job to make things easy for the group. And in fact, sometimes if we do that, then we do the work for the group when they should be, that things sometimes just need to be hard and you have to struggle through it.
Love that.
So maybe that's partly where it came from. And maybe it partly also just came from feeling like, okay, I'm the consultant here, so I need to be the expert and I have to have the answers. So, yeah, the coaching that I had, it's been really interesting. It's somebody who uses a method called integral coaching. And the idea is, first you understand what is the current state of how you experience the world. Mm-hmm. And so your coach gives you a metaphor for that. And so my metaphor for my current state was the way of the reliable octopus. And so, you know, you got eight arms and you're juggling everything and you want to be reliable. You want to be someone who people can look to and go, oh, yeah, yeah, he's going to sort stuff out. That was kind of how I was experiencing my work state. And then they say, okay, well, what are your goals? And let's make a new way for you to experience the world so you can actually meet those goals. And so my new way that we came up with was the way of the discerning mountain.
Oh, my gosh. So powerful. It's so different.
So then you've got this image of this physical, this big mountain actually taking up some space. And that had been something that I had grown up really shy and didn't want to be seen as someone who was, you know, butting into other people's space or whatever. So that was a really different metaphor. And, you know, a mountain has rivers and trees that thrive just by the mountain being there and saying, this is who I am. And
amazing.
You know, and some days a mountain has clouds and it's raining and there's thunderstorms, but the mountain just sits.
It's just so planted in, right? It's
then you try and integrate that new metaphor into how you experience your life. And
wow.
I'll probably be working on that for the rest of my life.
Don't you wish these things were like, oh yeah, now I've got the mountain. It's like, yep, life is easy. And we always hear, you know, it's always a destination, always a journey, never the destination. So it'll be exciting to see you grow into that discerning mountain over the years. That's wow. Thanks for being so honest and sharing that with us. One thing I also want to dive into is sometimes in the pre-chat, I just find out, you know, what does the podcast guest want to explore more about? Something that you wrote was facilitation failures and where things have gone wrong. I thought, wow, that's brave of you. Is there a particular experience you wanted to share? Or
there's too many. And I'm sure you've got some as well, Leanne. And I mean, this was partly prompted. So, you know, I love your process where you send people the Calendly invite and a month or two beforehand and you fill in what you want to talk about. And I think I just read this magazine article about failures and whether people learn from them or how you even think about failure or not. And so I was a little bit inspired by that. And when I look back at my own facilitation journey, there have been these sort of spikes of learning, I think, where something intense happens in a workshop and it really throws me off course for a little while. So, you know, one example, right back the very first workshop that I started facilitating after that that first program that I'd been on that kind of opened my eyes to what facilitation even was, it was for a young professionals conference, and about a week out, somebody else was facilitating it and they couldn't do it. So I had a week to prepare and it went okay, but there was this one table where there were four or five people sitting there and they didn't say a single word to each other for the entire 1 hour workshop. And, you know, I'd go over and I'd sort of try and prompt them, and it was as though one of them had just found out that the other one had been sleeping with their boyfriend for months, you know, like, and I just couldn't figure out what had happened and why that had happened. And that has really stuck with me as an experience. So that was one example where it threw my confidence and then also set me off on this path of trying to figure out, why did that happen? What didn't I do as the facilitator? What was going on? So there's been those little spikes that keep happening that suddenly see me off on another voyage of discovery.
Can I ask, if you were back in that scenario with hindsight now, what would you have done differently?
I didn't spend any time building psychological safety within the group.
Okay.
So, you know, there's new professionals coming in and, oh, hey, let's get straight into the work. Mm. And so, you know, that was the first learning for me as a facilitator. You need to spend time building some sort of relationship within the group and letting people know that you don't have to be right. This is a environment where you can be honest, you can stuff up, you can laugh, you can have a bit of fun. So if you spend that time at the start, then people in the group can open up.
Yeah, love it. It's
the other kind of big learning for me that then has deepened this further, and I'm still learning about this, is in New Zealand, our Indigenous people are Māori, and in Te Ao Māori, in the Māori world, there's a completely different way of thinking about the world, and a really important part of that is my health and well-being as an individual only happens if my whānau, which is my family, my extended family, are also happy and healthy. And so there's a word in Māori called whanaungatanga. And so it's got that word whānau, which is about family, and tanga is kind of a verb. And so whanaungatanga is about building relationships and building that experience of family and understanding, what is my connection to you, and how do we relate to each other? So going on to a marae, which is a Māori meeting house, and seeing how they conduct their meetings, because they're a society, a culture that is really built around verbal communication and storytelling. Whereas I grew up in a culture of sit down and shut up in the classroom and read the book and the answers at the back. So that for me was another really big learning experience, was going on to a marae and trying to facilitate something and having an absolute failure, and then again being sent off down another path of discovery.
I feel like now that we're having this conversation, it's like, I feel like I need to, maybe I'm too comfortable in what I'm delivering or not seeking out other inspiration, because I feel like I'm at a stage now where like everything's pretty comfortable. I have my sort of approach to running these things. But now that I'm hearing your stories, like, I'm getting actually a little bit jealous. I'm like, well, maybe I need to start, like, just jump into something completely different and give it a go. Because you're right, the best lessons are from failure, and just like, well, test that out.
They suck things in the moment. They're not totally fun when you're in them. But yeah, with the lovely benefit of hindsight, you look back on it and go, oh, that was a very rich experience. But when you're in it, and I'm quite an empathetic person. So, you know, one of the last facilitation failures for me, or growth moments, if I'm being more in that kind of way of thinking, wow, that was last year. Pandemic hit, and it threw me for like 3 or 4 days. I was just, it was as though I hadn't slept for 3 or 4 days. My brain, I don't know, something was just going on
beforehand there. Just, or after the workshop?
After it, I was just exhausted. So I don't know. It's not something I'd really wish on anybody else. But now that we're on this, I kind of want to turn the tables on you, Leanne. Like, what was the last big facilitation failure moment that you might have had?
Well, that's what I'm trying to reflect on. And even in the last year, it's been all virtual. So it hasn't been epic. It hasn't been epic. Most recently, we have this workshop, there's modules, and they were all missing a whole module of a workbook. But that was fine. I just was like, okay, just grab your notebook and we'll play it. So that's not even a big thing. It was just more of adapting in the moment. This is what I mean. It's like, I've been so boring the last year, because I think I'm playing in my comfort zone, perhaps. After I spoke to Jimbo on a recent podcast, he was again bringing up the whole connection and content, and given if he had to reduce time, the value of people being live is there for the connection, right? To each other, connection to the content, but they can always access information after. And so probably in reflection on some of the modules I've been running, I've been just it's just about there's so many like things to learn that maybe I have been not doing as much of the connection piece. So when you brought up the psychological safety, it's like, oh yeah, I've kind of just like tried maybe jumped in. But those are kind of micro. In terms of massive, no major fails apart from the one that kicked all this off, which was that session in Canada that that completely threw me, where a participant just refused to participate in an activity, and I was jet lagged. Like, talk about sleep deprivation. I was so out of first time I'd ever run that program. That was the impetus for starting the First Time Facilitator podcast. Mm. Was that moment? But nothing. So and like, you know, I don't want anything to really match that. But I mean, I don't mind being pushed, and yeah, I just haven't with virtual. I find maybe because I've got like I know like backups or things to do while we can wait to sort it out. It's not as maybe in person it can seem like you're possibly scrambling a bit more.
Mm. And I guess the other aspect of virtual is it is a lot harder to read the room, and it's a lot easier to just tune out if you are annoyed or frustrated, disengaged. You just put your video off or just leave the meeting. Whereas if you're in person, you can feel that person's tension and anger and frustration rising, and you can see it in the moment or whatever the situation might be.
That's it. I mean, that's the other thing about virtual is that whole Mark Bowden talks about that negative bias that we have. And I agree, like we do. And so I just try and dismiss it and then give myself all the energy and not worry about it.
So, I mean, the other thing that might be happening here, Leanne, is you've simply...
Maybe I'm just tuning it out.
Yeah, maybe you've worked through it. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. We're all a work in progress. But you were on that call. You were on the call with Alan Weiss. I remember that. And he was talking about self-esteem. And what I'm curious around is the combination of efficacy and esteem. So I guess with your incident where you spoke about you couldn't sleep for days after, what I try now is really, really try to separate the value that I'm delivering in terms of my workshop away from my self-worth. Because when it's together, that's when you go through that roller coaster of emotion. And again, I'm not there yet, but I'm recognizing, I'm more aware that, okay, is that a reflection on my skill or a reflection of my worth as a person? And
The other thing that I've been learning recently, particularly around conflict, because I think that was a challenge for me, well, still is, but is trying to figure out what's that productive level of conflict. So, you know, if you don't have any, then you're probably not having the conversation that you need to have. And if you're having way too much, well, then everyone's just going to disengage and turn off because it's too intense. So there's somewhere in the middle that's a nice level of conflict. And the other and partly why I'm interested in this, I just did a course on conflict and it's been really helpful. And the other thing I learned from that was as the facilitator, you do not have to resolve the conflict right then and there. Again, I think I have in the past put this pressure on myself that I need to help the group right now to figure this thing out. Whereas actually what I learned from that course was, no, you don't. Maybe all you need to do is to just listen and to give people the space to let stuff out, but you don't necessarily have to reach that resolution right then and there.
Yeah, I've got a question about that. Then, so that's the thing, like we know facilitation in our word, you know, to make easy, yet we have a certain level of status in the room. So if there is conflict, like let's just say I was in a team and you're facilitating us and there's conflict, I'd be looking to you, Paul, be going, is he going to sort this out? Is he going to solve it? How do you set the expectation then if the groups are going, well, this external person is going to fix all of it for us?
So maybe that's in that very first response is coming to it from a mindset of curiosity. So you see someone explode in a little bit of anger or whatever it might be, and often our default response is the fight, flight, freeze. And so that can kick in. You kind of first have to work through that personally, internally. So for me, that means I need to breathe and make sure I'm in touch with my breath. Otherwise I am just in flight mode because that's how I respond. Amazing.
Yeah.
And then I want to simply be curious about what is going on for the person right then and there. So often, you know, Leanna said, oh, you know, what the hell is going on with such and such and such, you know, this moment of anger, and we want to just shut it down and move on as quickly as possible. So instead, what I've been trying to learn and implement is how can I, in that moment, respond with some curiosity and can you tell me more about what's going on, or this is what I'm hearing, or I'm seeing that you feel blah, blah, blah. And all your mission is as the facilitator in that moment is to help that person feel heard and understood rather than solving their immediate problem.
That's really powerful. Yeah, thank you. I haven't really, I guess maybe I haven't put myself into situations where I am running. I've done some team coaching before, but it hasn't really got to that stage yet. So this is what I mean by maybe like my goal for this year is to get a super dysfunctional team and then just put myself in the middle of it. That's the call out to anyone on the podcast in a dysfunctional team.
Hey, Leanne, my team's a mess. Come and help.
Come in. Yeah. I'm like, I'm not here to solve it. I'm here to like, but I think it's great that that whole approach, and you can never go wrong. Like anytime I approach something with curiosity on this podcast, it makes for good interviews because you just go into that line of questioning. And I think the same, you're probably approaching your podcast the same way, is that you have maybe a series of questions, but you're led down a track of actually going deeper on something else.
Yeah. And my first interview, I prepared every question, you know, almost to the word. And now I do some background research. I know who I'm talking with, but I don't prepare any questions. I maybe just have a list of 5 or 6 topics that I'm interested in and follow your nose. And again, you know, this is kind of circling back to what we were talking at the start about what I've learned from podcasting is to trust my own curiosity and intuition. And actually this makes me think of something else that's been really helpful on my facilitation journey, which is psychodrama. Have you ever heard of that?
No, please share.
Okay. So it's when you first hear the term, you're sort of like, what, psychodrama? But how to explain it? Imagine if there's a combination between a marriage between counselling, group counselling, and theatre. So what happens in psychodrama is you turn up, there's a facilitator, let's say maybe there's about 10 of you in a room, and they just slowly sort of help people to feel comfortable, and then they start to pick out what might be going on in somebody's life. So, you know, that might focus on you, Leanne, and it turns out you've been really stressed by stuff at work recently, and the facilitator will kind of get to the point where there's a clear situation in your mind. So it might be one of those facilitation failures. I've put one of those through psychodrama before. And then you act out the situation. And so the other people in the room become your fellow actors, and the facilitator helps guide you through a process where you say, oh, well, this person was doing that. And then as the protagonist in the story, the hero in the story, I can then change roles. So, you know, maybe I've had this conflict with my boss. I'll act out that scene, get other people to act it. Then we reenact it with me being the boss. And I see what it's like when Paul said that thing. And so you can literally see this situation that you've been part of from a different perspective. And it's so helpful for empathizing with other people and what's going on and seeing why other people have responded in a certain way.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's like empathy on steroids.
Yeah.
Or like in slow motion replay, or like, you know, like the highlights reel, but then you pause here and you can have. That is interesting. I've never even heard of that. I'll have to take a look.
And so you can practice different responses. So I remember the first scenario I ever put through psychodrama was where my boss at the time had come in and got angry at me in the morning, and I'd done my classic flight mode. I just got out of there. I literally ran out of the room. And so then I experimented with these different ways of responding, like yelling back at him. What was that like? Or trying to reason with him, or And so you got to experience and practice in that moment, how can I respond differently and what happens when I do? And so a huge part of what I've learned from psychodrama is about spontaneity. And so when I was starting out as a facilitator, I wanted to control everything. And psychodrama has really helped me to throw away some of my own planning and expectations, and just go with what the group might need in the moment and mm-hmm. to be a bit more spontaneous.
Yeah, and I think it's also a case of like slowing down as well. Like you could probably, maybe it's like I hear that if I had a situation in a workshop, I could maybe very quickly hit pause on that and think, what are my four different options? Or what does it feel like from there? You know what I mean? Like just running my own little quick psychodrama in my mind.
I'm amazed that you can do that because personally, I'm very instinctive when I'm facilitating and I never have the brain power to go, these are my four options right now. Yeah, I'm more just like going with the flow in the moment and sensing of what is the next best thing to do. And it's only, I guess, when then, you know, I make sure there's a break that I can then go, actually, what are my options here?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, maybe we need to talk about, I mean, maybe there's a solo podcast episode here and like how to create some space for yourself when you're trying to like sort out what the next move is. How do you do that? Like you can do that easily. Sometimes I just go, breakout room, bang, let's talk about this, bang, bye. And then I'm like, okay, crap, what do I do now? So that's been handy with virtual as well. Paul, it's been just a delight talking to you today and hearing about your journey into facilitation and also your new role as podcast host and plus the journey that you've been on. I can really relate to the octopus. I think my metaphor would possibly be like a butterfly, but maybe move into like an oak tree. That would be my mountain. Nice. If our listeners would love to know more about the work that you do, reach out. Where can we send them?
Just LinkedIn, Paul McGregor, that's me, that's my playground. And, you know, I've learned a lot from you, Leanne, of using LinkedIn as a place to test out new ideas. And I used to get so obsessed with what I was posting on LinkedIn and have I got the words right. And through the Show Up program actually helped me to just care less and just throw stuff out there. So
I'm glad that's
been really helpful.
The major teaching is like, well, there's a really great meme out there. Yeah, just stop caring. There's a great meme out there and it has two guys. One says, no one cares. And he's like, looks really sad. And the second character is, no one cares, as if it's the most refreshing thing in the world. And I like
Yeah, that's what it is. It's the positive, nobody cares.
It's the positive, no one cares. Oh, that's awesome. We'll put a link to your LinkedIn profile as well as Business Lab and your podcast in the show notes for this one. Paul, it's always fun chatting with you. Thanks so much for being on the show today.
Awesome. Thanks, Leanne.